Hello, and welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, I'd like to welcome Dr. Noel Hasagaba to our podcast. Noel is a Deputy Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer at the Port of Long Beach, where he is responsible for managing the day-to-day administration and operations of the port. During his tenure there, he has helped the port navigate through the largest bankruptcy in shipping line industry history, as well as the mandated sale of its largest terminal, LBCT. These days, Noel is leading the port's response to the supply chain crisis. You've probably seen him on Meet the Press, This Week, or Fox News, or heard him on NPR. Dr. Hasagaba has more than 24 years of public and private sector experience spanning across a variety of industries. Prior to joining the port, he managed $200 million worth of contracts for a Fortune 500 company. He is a two-time graduate of USC, where he earned degrees in economics, business administration, and urban planning. He earned his doctorate degree in public administration from the University of Laverne. Noel serves on the boards of various industry and nonprofit organizations, including the Marine Exchange of Southern California and the Intermodal Association of North America, also known as IANA, and a very close partner, if you will, of Logistics Management Magazine, IANA, that is, where he currently serves as chairman of the board. That's a pretty long introduction. Noel, welcome to our podcast. It's great to have you.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for the kind invitation. Appreciate the opportunity that you have given me here to talk to you and talk about these pressing issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And pressing issues definitely is the theme, given everything the supply chain has undergone over the last several months, nearly 2 years, in fact. But I thought, Noel, maybe we could start with one of the other hats you wear outside of Port of Long Beach, and that would be with IANA. In your role as chairman of the board. And I was wondering if you could maybe just tell us in terms of what IANA's key priority issues are for 2022.
It's a great question, Jeff, especially as we start the new year. You know, as the only organization that represents the combined interests of the intermodal freight industry, IANA plays a key role in promoting the growth of efficient intermodal freight transportation. And we do that through innovation, education, dialogue. And while this is something IANA has done over the course of its history, the supply chain disruption caused by the pandemic has attracted the attention and interest of policymakers like never before. I mean, we've gone from being an invisible industry to very visible. And so we have a unique opportunity, Jeff, to really get the word out on the importance of intermodal, the importance of supply chain, educate policymakers, work with stakeholders to shape policy that will really move the needle and get our supply chain ready for the next generation. To get into some specifics, I would say that one priority has to do with the recently passed bipartisan infrastructure law, which is the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act.
Yes.
This bipartisan infrastructure law, Jeff, is the largest long-term investment in our infrastructure and economy in our nation's history. Just to give you some quick stats, it provides $550 billion over fiscal years 2022 through 2026. It includes funding for roads, bridges, mass transit, water infrastructure, resiliency, broadband. And on top of that, this infrastructure law includes many of the policy positions that IANA has been advocating for over the years. For example, increased port, highway, rail, and terminal project funding. Pilot apprenticeship programs to allow for 18 through 21-year-old truck drivers. And importantly, the establishment of an Office of Multimodal Freight within the U.S. Department of Transportation's Office of the Secretary. Yeah. This is something, Jeff, that I testified and advocated for on behalf of IANA back in 2019 before a Senate Commerce Committee. And so this is very encouraging, the fact that this infrastructure law is now reality, and the opportunity to work with the Department of Transportation as these funds get rolled out is going to be an important opportunity for IANA. And just to give you a quick side note, Secretary Buttigieg visited our ports in Southern California on January 11th, and I had the pleasure of being among those to welcome the secretary. And on behalf of IANA, I also had the opportunity to thank the secretary and pledge our support in working with he and his team to make this infrastructure law effective for all stakeholders across the freight transportation industry.
Yeah, that's terrific.
In the nearer term, though, I mean, to answer your question, I would say that another big priority for IANA is our ongoing support for the independent contractor driver model.
Okay.
As you know, this is a model that is, this is something that impacts every mode in the freight supply chain. Having the ability to have flexibility and having the choice of utilizing this model is very important for the motor carriers that we represent. And again, this is something that we're going to continue to support as an association going forward.
Yes, terrific. And then just as a quick follow-up, Noel, how are things, in your opinion, going up? How would you describe the overall state of the intermodal sector over the last year or so, just given the myriad supply chain issues that we've all been seeing, and also in terms of sort of the intermodal sector's outlook for 2022, I guess more from an operational, you know, slash volume type perspective in that sense.
Sure. Well, I can tell you that in 2021, you know, full year intermodal volume rose by 3.6% over 2020. And that represents over $51 billion in annual revenue. But the numbers really don't capture all that has gone on. You know, there continue to be challenges as a direct result of the pandemic and the unprecedented freight volumes. I mean, I can tell you that wearing my port hat, we've never seen anything like this, Jeff. Just the amount of volumes that are coming in through our ports, entering our freight transportation network. All of the components of the intermodal freight supply chain have been affected. And there are issues with having the right equipment in the right place at the right time. Solutions to freight congestion must be developed collaboratively. Mm-hmm. This is something that IANA has been a very key player in over the years, but it's even more important now. And we have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, I believe, Jeff, to really bring the transportation community together to facilitate some of these innovative solutions and overcome not just the current congestion, but really set our supply chain up for success over the long haul. And so I really believe that this pandemic, you know, the supply chain disruptions that it has created are opportunities to create a more resilient supply chain in conjunction with this infrastructure law.
Yeah, absolutely. And now shifting over to the Port of Long Beach, how would you assess how things are going sort of operationally in this early into this new year? I mean, obviously, there's not a ton of data or evidence to work with. But I know, obviously, and you had just mentioned the pandemic, it's sort of impacting everything. Where do things stand sort of at the outset of the year?
Yeah, it's hard to talk about operations or what's gone on without mentioning the pandemic. But just to give you a quick profile, high-level view of the port over the last year, you know, our volumes in 2021, Jeff, set a new record. 9.4 million TEU is the highest we've ever processed in terms of containerized cargo. And that represents a 16% year-over-year increase. Now, when you look at what the Port of Long Beach handled in combination with what the Port of Los Angeles handled, and again, together, we represent the largest gateway in America. We processed over 20 million TEU. That is a record that's an amount of volume that we've never processed before. We've never even come close to it. So it just shows how heavy the volumes have been. Again, the direct result of the pandemic is, you know, we were spending more time in our homes. We shifted away from buying services to buying goods. Spending more time at home induced a lot of consumption, online shopping, e-commerce, a lot of home goods. I mean, home goods, home improvement goods literally were through the roof.
Yes.
So that was the driver for the historic demand that we've seen. But then on the other hand, we also saw the impacts to capacity, right? Every single segment of the supply chain, from the ports to the warehouses to the motor carriers, to the railroads, every segment has felt the impact of capacity, either with workers calling in sick to work or deciding to change careers, to change jobs. So the combination of this historic volume with tightened capacity is what really is at the root of a lot of these disruptions that we've been seeing. And here in the Port of Long Beach, we've been working very closely with the administration, with our stakeholders, specifically the Port Envoy, John Picari, who's done a phenomenal job of helping us facilitate and convene the stakeholders to get to near-term solutions.
Yeah, that's terrific. It's nice to see. Well, I guess it took a pandemic to get the full attention of the importance of supply chain in some circles, but whatever works to get it to front and center, because I think it's really shown its resiliency. And looking back, you had been talking, Noel, about how people had shifted from services-based activities, such as going to baseball games, going to movies, what have you, to more buying goods during the real lockdown period of the pandemic. But, you know, people never really stopped shopping, for example, and especially holiday shopping. So I just wanted to take a quick look back with you at the 21 peak holiday, I guess, shopping / shipping season, if you will, from the Port of Long Beach perspective. You know, did you see material differences or changes from things like consumers ordering goods earlier, retailers moving ahead compared to where they typically would in terms of inventory restocking efforts, things like that? What was the story there? And looking back now to sort of having a chance to catch your breath from the holiday season before Lunar New Year too, how did things go, would you say, on balance?
You know, Jeff, that it's an interesting question. Of course, it's always easier to look back than it is to look ahead, right? But, you know, I would characterize the last couple of years this way. You know, the typical ebbs and flows, peaks and valleys that we see throughout the year have been replaced the last couple of years with this wave of cargo. It all began in July of 2020, and it really hasn't let up. I think one major reason for that is all the uncertainty that was brought on by the pandemic caused a lot of shippers to abandon their just-in-time strategies, and now they've replaced it with just-in-case. So I think it's a combination of consumers here in America spending more of their disposable income on goods and demanding more imports, as well as the uncertainty about how soon or how efficiently cargo would arrive to its destination. So that really induced a lot of shippers to take more of a just-in-case approach. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you have all these factors, right? The effects of the pandemic overseas, the effects here at home. So I would say that that's the way that you could describe the last couple of years. I will say that we did feel the pre-holiday rush here at the Port of Long Beach in the Southern California ports. When you look at the ships at anchor, which was one of the metrics that we were tracking, we were hitting records almost on a monthly basis. Yeah, and yeah. The pre-holiday rush in the months of August, September, for example, even October, we saw the number of ships at anchor or at drift eclipse the 100 mark. So again, it just shows how much demand there was for imports and how the market was responding to that demand.
Yeah, absolutely. And just out of curiosity, has the port issued its full year 2021 volumes yet, or is that coming out in the next week or two?
Yeah, we have. We recently released it. It's for the calendar year 2021. We set a new milestone, 9.4 million TEU. And that represents, Jeff, a year-over-year increase of 16%. And again, when you look at what the two ports in Southern California processed in terms of TEU, we hit the 20 million TEU mark for the first time in our history. So again, everything we saw throughout the year in terms of ships at anchor, containers piling up on terminal, the lack of equipment to support that growth showed itself in these numbers.
Okay, absolutely. And something that has gotten a little bit of attention was how late last year, both the Port of Long Beach and the Port of Los Angeles announced they would each be charging container dwell fees, but the fees have yet to be implemented as a number of containers on the port's docks has since seen subsequent declines. So I guess just in short, I was wondering sort of what the current status of that fee is in terms of it being implemented at a further at a future date, or maybe will it not be needed at this point?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking, Jeff. It's an opportunity to really explain the rationale behind the fee. I mean, some people may wonder why at this time would the ports come out with a fee, but it really represents one of three major actions that we've taken to address the supply chain disruption. One of the very first things we did is we activated vacant land inside the port. To date, Jeff, we have repurposed in the Port of Long Beach over 130 acres of vacant land. That's an enormous amount of land that we've applied to this challenge. And the idea there is very simple. Warehouse capacity is at an all-time low. The vacancy rate in the Inland Empire, which is about 60 to 70 miles from the ports, is about 1%. So in the absence of warehouse capacity, we noticed that containers were piling up in the terminal, and that's what was creating this backlog of ships. And so by making land available inside the port, it allowed our terminals and our shippers to push those boxes out, and it provided immediate relief to the terminals.
Okay.
The second major action we took is we expanded hours of operation at the port. You may have heard that one of our terminals, TTI, has been open 24 hours a day, 4 days a week since October, and every other terminal in the Southern California complex is opening earlier, they're closing later. Everyone's expanding the hours of operation. And then the third action, which brings me to your question, is we started noticing that a lot of these inbound containers were spending three times as long inside the terminal once they were loaded off the ship. Mm-hmm. And that was creating a lot of issues for the terminals. And so this fee, Jeff, that we announced in October was intended to encourage shippers to remove those inbound containers more quickly. I can tell you that the fee has worked, and that's one of the reasons why we haven't collected it. We evaluate on a week-to-week basis, and every week since we announced the fee, we've been postponing it. But just to give you an idea, when we first announced this fee at the Port of Long Beach, those containers, those inbound loaded containers that were sitting on terminal 9 days or longer, accounted for about 35% of all containers on terminal. Today, that figure is closer to 11%. So we made quite a dent on the number of those containers. And just since we announced the fee back in October 28th through last Friday, January 14th, that percentage of containers on terminal 9 days or more is down by 50%, 50. So the fee has worked. And that's the reason why we haven't implemented it. We do evaluate on a week-to-week basis, and you know, we just encourage all of our stakeholders to continue to do their part.
Yeah, that's terrific. Those are some impressive numbers. But I just wanted to clarify real quick, that 50% figure, is that for Port of Long Beach alone or for both Port of Long Beach and Port of Los Angeles?
That is for Port of Long Beach alone, Jeff. But if you look at the numbers for both ports, we're at about that same number. It's okay. It's anywhere from 50 to 55%.
Okay. All right. That's what I thought it was. Earlier in our conversation, you had talked about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and how Secretary Buttigieg had just been out at the port last week to visit and meet with you and your team. One component of that funding I noticed was the $52 million grant for Port of Long Beach's Pier B on dock rail facility. And I just was wondering if you could provide us with a little insight there, how that money will be spent and on that on dock rail facility, sort of what your key objectives are and how it will help from a service perspective too.
Yeah, we were very pleased to receive word that the Department of Transportation had awarded our project that sum of funding, Jeff. It really goes a long way. $52 million was the single largest amount awarded thus far. And our Pier B on dock rail support facility is critical to our success in the future. What it does is it essentially enables our terminals to move more containers on dock. And in the supply chain disruption, what we've noticed is this this need to move more containers off the ship onto a train and out of the docks has become a real priority and a real opportunity to move containers out of our ports more efficiently and faster. Mm-hmm. And so this funding will help us build out this project. It's a multi-year project that has a price tag of in excess of $1 billion. But these $52 million will really help us get this project off the ground. We are currently in phase one, which is the design phase, Jeff. And the way that we've designed the project is that as each phase is completed, we're going to start adding on-dock rail capacity immediately. So very excited about the project. Our Class 1 rail partners are excited about it as well. And if we continue to see volumes the way that we've seen the last couple of years, we're going to need it, right? We're going to need to find ways to move containers out of the docks faster, more efficiently, and this is going to be one of those ways.
Okay, great. Now, your Class 1 rail partners being, I'm assuming, the Union Pacific and Burlington Northern?
That's correct.
Okay, great. Just a couple more quick ones here. You know, I know we've talked a lot about the pandemic, so we'll talk a little bit more about it. Just from the perspective of sort of the biggest logistics lessons learned, and I guess it's more of a collective question in terms of the biggest logistics lessons learned for your primary stakeholders, if you would, the BCOs, for our audience, that's beneficial cargo owners or shippers, the container lines themselves, and also marine terminal operators. You know, going back to the onset of the pandemic, everything's been so fluid, if you will. And I'm sure over that course of time, you've been forced to make quick decisions on the fly and things like that. So can you talk about things from that perspective, maybe addressing those groupings?
Sure, Jeff. I think there will be many lessons learned. And if we miss the opportunity to learn from what's happened the last couple of years, shame on us. This is a crisis that we cannot let go to waste. I think you're already beginning to see some of the fruit of what we've learned. Certainly the investments in infrastructure, our freight transportation sector has been severely underfunded over the years. And I think you're seeing the Congress take meaningful steps to correct that. Right. From an industry standpoint, operationally, I can tell you that every segment of the supply chain is tuned in. Everyone has stepped up and figured out that the best way to ensure our collective success as a system, which also ensures our success as segments in that system, is to collaborate. It's to find ways to share information, find ways to help each other. You know, people often forget that we are a system of systems. And sometimes what happens in a system like that, Jeff, is when everyone tries to optimize their own operations, at the expense of others, it leads to a suboptimal system, right? So collaboration is key. And this is where the administration, through their port envoy, has been very helpful to the ports and the stakeholders. He's been able to come to the table, bring everyone to the table, and really focus in on near-term solutions, such as the ones I mentioned earlier. Activating vacant land, expanding hours of operation, 24/7 operations, this fee. I would say that one of the key lessons coming out of this is going to be the addressing the lack of visibility. Shippers continue to struggle, and they have struggled over the years with this basic question: Where's my cargo? Yeah. We've taken steps here in Long Beach, Jeff, to address that. We've been working on this for some time. We just launched it in December. It's our digital initiative. We call it the Supply Chain Information Highway, and what we're striving to do is to develop a digital infrastructure that enables all existing and new platforms that will emerge in the future to be able to communicate and interrelate with each other. And these are platforms that are born either out of the public or private sector. I mean, think of this as the digital highway, and think of these individual platforms and portals as individual cars. This supply chain information highway will enable all these independent discrete portals to travel on this and share their data. So we're very excited about that. We think that that's definitely going to be one of the lessons learned.
Okay, terrific. And just to wrap up, I had read that early next month in February, the Port of Long Beach and the Port of Los Angeles will be hosting a meeting about the San Pedro Bay Port's Clean Air Action Plan. A chief objective of that plan calls for the ports to reduce their greenhouse gas levels 40% below 1990 levels by the year 2030 and 80% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. The plan was originally approved in 2006. So how are things progressing in terms of reaching these goals, and what needs to be done for that to happen in order for them to come to fruition?
Thank you for asking that, Jeff. You know, we've been so, distracted with all things supply chain disruption that sometimes it's easy to overlook what we're doing on the environmental mitigation side. But I have some positive updates. Even as we've gone through the pandemic, we haven't let off the gas. Our efforts to continue our objectives and our goals as it relates to emissions mitigation. I can tell you that based on our latest air emissions inventory, and this compares to our baseline of 2005, which is when we first announced our Clean Air Action Plan. I can tell you that diesel particulate matter is down 90%. Nitrogen oxides are down 62%. Sulfur oxides are down 97%. And greenhouse gases are down 10%. And this is during the same time span, Jeff, that our TEUs have grown by 21%. Right. So there's been a lot of progress achieved on this front, but we're always striving to do more. And so this latest iteration of the Clean Air Action Plan really pushes the envelope. We envision zero emissions cargo handling equipment by the year 2030 in our terminals and zero emissions trucks by the year 2035. And all of these goals, and with the support of industry, because of course we could never do this ourselves. It's really our industry partners, the shipping lines, the motor carriers, the terminals, everyone stepping up to do their part to be innovative, to invest in their capital and their equipment. We're very, very optimistic that we'll be able to achieve these goals.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Well, listen, Noel, we're at the end of our time for today's podcast. And on behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd like to offer up a big thanks for spending some time with us today.
It's my pleasure, Jeff. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Yeah,
absolutely. No, this was great. And for those of you who are out there on Twitter, please feel free to give the Port of Long Beach a follow, simply at Port of Long Beach, all one big word there. And also, please give us a follow if you haven't already, simply at Logistics MGMT. And also, please go ahead and sign up for our podcast wherever you get them. Just look for Supply Chain 24/7. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.